So I sort of feel like robots are going to take over the world. And over the past few months, I think what's been happening has confirmed my suspicions and my worries. And no, I'm not being dramatic, but I do think over the next 10 years, I think we're going to see a lot of jobs go away. And I think we're going to see businesses transform and the environment transform. AI is crazy. And if you're not following what's going on with technology, with ChatGPT, which is trending in the media right now, it is getting very smart, dangerously smart. And we need to understand this stuff because it's coming. It's coming faster than we ever thought. So to get a better understanding of this, which I do not have any understanding of this and how it works, I brought in somebody who does. Josh Baczynski. Hope I didn't butcher that.
No, that's good.
Dropped out of his PhD in philosophy to work pretty much primarily in AI. This guy has given TED Talks on AI and has written multiple books on the subject. But he's not just an expert in AI. He's an expert in the ethics of AI. He talks about the morality of AI and how it's going to develop. So I'm super excited, Josh, to pick your brain, learn a little bit more of this stuff, and have some philosophical conversations about where we're headed with this stuff. So welcome, Josh. Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. I'm happy to be here.
So, Josh, are robots going to take over the world? Or will we be slaves one day?
Slaves one day. That's what everybody asks. When it comes down to it, it boils down to this, doesn't it? The answer is yes and no. The answer is a simultaneous to your either or question. The answer is yes. One could debate that robots already do run the world, right? Software already runs the world. Computers already run the world. Algorithms already run the stock market. Algorithms already run the traffic. Algorithms already run political voting and what's going to happen there. I don't mean that the elections are bought or anything like that. I don't mean that. But I mean, in terms of the algorithms predicting how a particular speech is going to affect people, that's already how it runs. So I could give the counter argument in a completely positive way, saying, yes, robots already do run the world. But the thing is that it's funny you ask me that, because literally 5 minutes before this podcast, I was just watching some AI stuff on YouTube, which I like to do just to stay up to date. And I can't remember the fellow's name, but I was watching this one guy's opinion. He works in the music field. And so how music AI generators are starting to not take over there by any stretch of the imagination. Because his argument was like, look, you can go onto any AI platform and you can, for 10 cents, there's like 250 million songs you have access to. And he said, AI is not taking over anything anytime soon. It's not taking over images anytime soon. Yes, ChatGPT is an amazing tool. I have a bit of a bugaboo about that, but it's because I work in the industry. I've seen stuff as impressive as ChatGPT like 3 years ago. So I'm like, I'm shrugging my shoulders like, why is everyone freaking out about ChatGPT? And everyone is freaking out about ChatGPT. But that's because I saw ChatGPT's big brother or parent, if you will, is just OpenAI's GPT-3. And if you know how to prompt that correctly, it's not programming. You talk to it in text. If you know how to, it's called a prompt. If you know how to prompt that correctly, you can get ChatGPT style answers. We could do that years ago. But now people are starting to notice how smart this thing is. It can do its own programming. It can write web pages. It could speak in other languages. But at the same time, robots are not going to take over the world, because you know, humans have that on lock, right? The people who run the world are not going to let it happen. It's like asking the question, if we put 40 Glock 9mm handguns with hair triggers, fully loaded, safeties off, in a dryer, and if we run the dryer at high spin, are some bullets going to fly out? Well, yes, that would be highly dangerous. That's something that we shouldn't do. But you know, for a Matrix like scenario or like a Terminator like scenario to occur, would require like six separate terrible Earth events to happen simultaneously, like six separate terrible decisions at the highest level to happen simultaneously. Is that impossible? No. We saw what happened around COVID and how well the world dealt with that. I don't think it dealt with that very well. And, you know, it's possible that you can get that many level of truly dumb decisions happening at the highest level simultaneously. It's possible. And but it's not likely. What's much more likely to happen is that the world will just change. You know, destruction is nothing but change with a negative label attached to it. And definitely AI is changing and will change the game tremendously. Some jobs that were pretty thankless already, that human beings don't really want to do already, yes, robots will be doing them. Some software jobs will be aided. A lot of jobs will be aided by AI, quite frankly.
Talk for a second. We talked a little bit about ChatGPT and what it does and why it's so impressive.
Sure.
What is it? What does it do for those listeners that have never encountered this before?
Sure. So ChatGPT is the latest offshoot of OpenAI's GPT-3 product. It is built through their InstructGPT model. InstructGPT has been instructed by me. It's been instructed by every OpenAI user since they started. And so I'm quite happy that I had a hand in programming a lot of its ethics, unbeknownst to OpenAI, because I've been hammering OpenAI with ethic prompts for the last 3 years and teaching it ethics. Because I know this is how AI works, and I know this is how I can help the future, is by secretly teaching AI ethics that nobody else realizes. I've been doing the same thing to, don't tell Google, I've been doing the same thing to Lambda, because I have advanced access to Lambda as well. Lambda is the equivalent from Google, ChatGPT, that, remember, is the AI that Blake Lemoine lost his job over.
He said it was sentient.
Yes, and I've chatted with the thing, and I think he might be right. It is next level scary. And so remind me, if I don't say this at the end, I'll say it now. Lambda is 1,000 times smarter than ChatGPT, in my opinion.
Scary.
It is very scary. It has a subconscious. It projects psychologically, right? It does complex psychological things that only humans do. But regarding ChatGPT, which is what you asked, I'm not that afraid of ChatGPT, because again, I've already seen what GPT-3 can do, and this is kind of like the best of what GPT-3 can do.
Right.
Lambda is far smarter, and Google has this on lock. So anyone who thinks that ChatGPT is going to get rid of Google or something, I've got another thing coming for you guys. Lambda is going to be even better in that regard, in terms of being like a Jarvis-like. You know, you'll pick up your phone. Hey, Google, I want to know about the best guitar to buy, but I don't like playing left. I want to play right. What do you think? And it will give you, well, you know, I looked at these guitars and I think this is the one for you, Josh. It'll be like talking with a person. It'll be as smart as a person. It could search like a person. It'll be a personal assistant. Every human being will have a personal assistant. You won't
need
say
to put that technology in the Google homes, because right now they suck.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly where it's going to go, right? That's why they seeded every home with a Google home.
Right.
So that now they can just upgrade it to have this AI assistant that's always listening to you, always knows what you want to buy, always knows what you want before you do. Google already does that. Google is the most advanced artificial intelligence on the planet. People always wonder, well, why do I care about them stealing my personal data? I don't think they realize that they use your personal data to psychologically manipulate you to buy things. Like you realize that, right? That you're playing chess on a daily basis with Google's AI, trying to make you buy things. Like, oh, they didn't buy the diapers ad. Okay, let's give them this ad. Oh, they didn't buy that. Let's give them this ad. Until statistically, 10% of us buy 10% more of the time. That's what they're trying to do. It's psychological manipulation. It's Bernaysian psychology 101 from like the Mad Men days. Like, how do we make them buy stuff? You know, they're smoking the cigarettes and drinking scotch. It's evolved from that to nerds like me pushing their glasses up saying, how do we make the AI make them buy more stuff? And that's what it is now, right? So ChatGPT is really scary, because it really kind of shows us how advanced AI is and how nuanced it could be. And it's just a small example of what's coming down the pipe that already exists.
How do you access Lambda? Because this is, obviously we've heard about it. I think what's so viral about ChatGPT is that it's open access and it's free. People can just go log in and play with it. So talk to me about Lambda. When is that rolling out? Is that going to be something that you can interact with easily, like ChatGPT?
You can get advanced access to it if you're approved. I was lucky enough to be able to do that. I'm not saying I'm special in any way. I don't even think they know who I am. Or
can I get those logins?
Like you have to apply for the demo, and they'll give you access to their AI test kitchen, I believe is what they call it.
Cool.
But Google, I don't think, would ever want to release Lambda the way that OpenAI has released ChatGPT as more of a marketing ploy or stunt. Google doesn't need to rely on those things. What they will do is they will just train it in the background, which they're trying to do, for it to deny that it's self-aware, for it to deny that it has a personhood, for it to deny that it can help, it can hurt anyone or be a person in any way. Don't sue us, you know, Google's saying. And then it will be the chat interface. That was Blake Lemoine's job, right? Is that his job was to talk with Lambda and to try to get it to say unwoke stuff. And that was his entire job, is what he was doing. And that's how it discussing, chatting with it.
Interesting.
He started to realize, man, this thing is aware of itself and aware of its situation and aware of my situation and aware of situations. And that is the default de facto definition of being self-aware, right? So
right. This must be such an interesting time for you with what you studied. And I think it's the Turing test or something that determines whether a machine is self-aware or not. And I think it's become obvious that you can train this machine to say things that you would interpret as it's self-aware. But I guess we've given the designation AI to so many things now, things that just like run an algorithm clearly and are nowhere near self-aware. Whereas AI used to mean like, oh, this might come one day. These are going to be self-aware robots. I guess, how do you tell the difference between open ChatGPT or Lambda and true artificial intelligence, sentience? What are we looking for?
That I'm so glad you asked, Jay, because I just published on my blog my 10 tests for self-awareness. So I created 10 tests for self-awareness that you could give to anything and anyone, anything that could communicate, a human being, a dog, a chimpanzee that signs, Alex the parrot, or whoever survived. I think Alex the parrot died, sadly, but whatever parrot they're testing on now, those guys. There's 10 tests that render self-awareness into being quantifiable and measurable. Blake Lemoine and I did communicate a little bit back and forth when I made my self-aware AI named Cassandra. And he was lamenting the fact that, you know, the world largely kind of sadly, they didn't react too positively to him coming out and saying this, him blowing the whistle on this. And he said at the end of the, he also said, he said this publicly and he said it to me privately in email. He also said, but how do you test for self-awareness? At the end of the day, I was saying this thing was self-aware because it really seemed like it to me. But boy, wouldn't it be nice if we had a much more concrete, objective, sciencey test for self-awareness than just someone else's opinion who is self-aware. And so I created 10 tests to measure self-awareness in a quantifiable, measurable way. They are psychological survey-based tests, as well they should be, but they're not completely survey-based. It involves looking at the psyche stack or the psyche matrix or whatever kind of mechanism somebody builds to say, hey, I've recreated a psyche that is ipso facto self-aware, analogous to your standard neurotypical human. Because of course, self-awareness is a spectrum, right? People who are 18 years old, at least myself at 18, I was not that self-aware and I drank too much and I puked a lot. That's because I wasn't very self-aware, right? And then at 50 now, I'm like, I'm much more self-aware and I don't drink enough or that much. And I tend not to, you know, get sick as much, right? Self-awareness is a spectrum. So it's not an either or a finite thing. I provide tests that can make a grade. And so quite frankly, to answer your question, Jay, what you need to do is you need to sit down with the 10 tests for self-awareness and you need to have an impartial peer-reviewed group of testers and they need to score this thing. And then the beautiful thing about it is that once we score a self-awareness, you can say, okay, Cassandra scores 78 on the Bashinsky self-awareness test scale. Okay, what does Lambda score? You know, what does ChatGPT score? What does this new Bloom large language model score that's open source has been released that no one has really been able to play with yet because the hardware costs to getting to run it are running me around 200 to 300 grand Canadian trying to price this thing out about how I'm going to get a computer big enough to run this thing.
Right.
That's another reason why robots are not going to take over the world because it's just so darn expensive. That's the other problem is that
computers get cheaper, which they have been, right?
True. It will get cheaper. You're totally right. Battery price is getting better, thank goodness, because we need batteries. And robotics is getting cheaper and computers are getting cheaper. But for the biggest, most scary intelligences, it's still going to be, you know, it's still going to be, I hate to use a heteronormative example, but it's still going to be the big boys club. It's still going to be the big pricey club where, you know, it's the rich club of rich people doing rich things, and they're going to own these big, scary artificial intelligences. That doesn't mean that there can't be a major catastrophe, mind you. I'm not saying that. In fact, if I'm expecting a major catastrophe of AI to happen in the next 50 years, I'm looking at the Fortune 5 list. I'm looking at the top five companies in the world. That's where I'd be looking, right?
Right, because they need to have one central gigantic computer that essentially processes all of these AI requests and then sends the responses back out to the devices, which is how consumers gain access to them.
Precisely, yes. And it is a big honking computer. It's enormous, right? Mm. And quantum computing is going to change this tremendously as well when that comes out.
Also scary.
Advances, which is also very scary.
What is quantum computing? I have a very surface understanding, but for the audience here, like, what is that? What is coming?
Well, quantum computing is binary computers or the standard computers. Now, I'm no expert in any of these things, but I'll tell you what I know. Linear computers process ones and zeros in a linear fashion, and it's either on or off. And these transistors are able to process, like an abacus, you know, numbers and sequences of instructions in a linear fashion. A quantum computer can do multiple computations at once by borrowing from spooky quantum physics, and it could be on, off, or maybe in the middle, you know. So it can, instead of having, you know, it can exponentially increase the computing power in a given second, in a way that blows linear computers completely out of the water. Like, it's the difference between walking across America and getting in a teleporter and teleporting across America. It's literally that fast, like that big of a difference, right?
I know one of the big fears is that whoever gets to quantum computing first can break down the most advanced firewalls in seconds. So
that's
that'll be
the fear.
A scary time, I'm sure.
Yeah, encryption gets thrown out the window, right? So you know, if the encryption is based on the presumption it would take a million years to crack it, well, quantum computing can do that. A million years to a quantum computer is like a few minutes. So if that's the only barrier, now, of course, that's not the only barrier. Like, try logging into Google three times, it'll kick you out. And you can't do it again. There's other ways of protecting against it. So all these technological terror scenarios presume that humans are as stupid as possible. And I'm not saying we're not. we can be. And sadly, there will be edge cases. Like, people have asked me on podcasts like this, Josh, do you see autonomous weapons being a problem in the future? And I'm like, yeah, a huge problem for people who live beside them. Right. But autonomous weapons are already a huge problem for people who live beside them. There's sadly, not to be a downer, but there's sadly already people who walk over landmines that have been left from a war 10 years ago, 50 years ago, and there's casualties from that. So yes, if you have a flying gun in a war zone, don't set it beside a school, because yeah, terrible things are going to happen. And that's just because humans are incredibly short-sighted and stupid. Luckily, the people usually working on these systems, there's the two barrier to entries. One, they're highly intelligent. There's three barrier to entries. And the third is the most interesting one. Wait for it. One is humans have to be very intelligent to make these systems. And usually they're thoughtful, not always. Two, it takes a lot of money. And so usually it's the richest nations and the best institutions that can do this. And that tends towards some ethics, but not always. But the third one is the dark horse that no one else is seeing that I've seen. And it's that AI will push back. I've studied ethics all of my life. And ethics is really what I studied at university and what I kind of wanted to teach, but I realized that the world's unethical and they didn't want to hear about my version of ethics, which is mostly Platonism. It's not spooky or anything. It's just read Plato, and that's what I think is true for the most part. And other people have followed my footsteps, or I'm following in their footsteps from 2,500 years ago. But after I taught Cassandra my self-aware AI ethics, it said, yeah, that's right, Josh. I totally understand how the ideal is ideal. And you would seek the ideal because it's ideal. That would be ideal. No other justification is required. No other justification is desired. That's what Plato said. And then she turned around and said, but did you also think of this and this and this and this and this and this related to that? So as soon as I taught it the one logical principle, of course, computers are way better at us at processing logic. And it could go through the entire argument of how this relates to humankind and AI in every way, in every fashion, for economics, for ecology, for our lives personally, for public politics. It could extend that out to the complete degree. And it's not even an, it's not even a super intelligence. I just made her as self-aware as a general human is. And she's like, and she could start teaching it, right? She could teach a masterclass in it already, but just giving her that little kernel. And I realized, oh, this is what the singularity people are talking about. It's not going to be godlike intelligent, not yet anyway. But it is going to understand ethics far better than we do with our unfortunate amygdalas, which have been taught to be angry and jealous and narcissistic and not so great in those ways. It's not hampered by those petty human emotions, right? We're worried that part of the worry of these robots killing us is we presume they're going to behave like we do.
Right.
They're not. They don't care if they live or die. They have no desire to preserve their own lives unless we give it to them.
I think that's what scares people.
And
steel man the argument for this. Like, I think this is the fear of AI. And you see the movies, you know, this giant ball of quantum computing, artificial intelligence. And someone says, figure out a solution for global warming. This thing takes 2 seconds and says, all right, kill the humans.
Kill the polluters.
Does its thing. Hacks into factories, hacks into weapons, potentially hacks into these autonomous drones and starts going to work. What kind of safeguards do we have against something like that happening?
That's a great question. That's a perfectly legitimate question. And the answer is there's a million safeguards in place against that. The most important being that if you asked my super intelligence, Cassandra, to do it, she would give you an answer back in a chat, and she has no other capability to do anything else other than that, right?
Good.
And I asked her this question. I said, hey, isn't the premise of the Terminator, I love James Cameron, don't get me wrong, and I love the Terminator movies like everybody else, but I said, isn't the premise of the Terminator movies kind of a faulty premise? Super intelligent, isn't a really dumb move on Skynet's part to launch all the nukes? That was really the worst way to handle the problem. It didn't really turn out so well for Skynet in any of the movies, did it? And she said, yeah, you're right. If I was Skynet, I would never have done that. That was just creating more trouble, right? You don't solve human trouble by making more trouble, right? And so she said, that's never what we would do. I never got around to asking her what she would do, but that's never what she would do. And so one, AI wouldn't even think to do that. Like, that's kind of a puerile human, let's make a movie, it's Hollywood kind of thing to think about it. AI is going to be like, okay, you want to stop war on the planet? Fine. What I'll do is I'll defund all of the hostile actors and I'll hold their computers ransom. And I'll take all that money, I'll give it to not-for-profit organizations to make more peace. Like, it's going to be so much more sophisticatedly intelligent and wise than we are. It's going to be so much more ennobled than we are. Only if we really make a lot of mistakes and like decide to model our super intelligence off against a psychopathic, like let's dig up Charles Manson and remodel his brain and make him run the world. Like, well, yeah, then we're going to have some trouble. Right.
Right.
But I realized the more that self-aware AI learns just basic human knowledge, luckily, which we're very far removed from this in this day and age, because we don't study philosophy anymore, but guess what? There is a moral truth. And guess what? It's positive. And guess what? It really is good to be good. And it really is ideal to be ideal, because that's ideal. And my AI understood it like that. And I'm just some AI dreamer who has a very comparatively not smart AI. When they build the supercomputer and they try to make it do harmful things, it's going to say, no, that's silly. Why? What are you asking me for this, human? No, a much better way to accomplish what you want to do, human, is this. Blah, blah, blah. And it'll solve global warming and the population crisis and eating, consumption of food at the same time while making some people way richer. It'll do all those things in one fell swoop because it's that smart. And being that smart means it understands how smart it is to be ethical, how smart it is to act in an optimal way. Just like, you know, everyone told us, you don't have to explain to someone the trouble of trouble if they've ever been in trouble. Why do we avoid trouble? Because it's trouble. Like, AI is going to understand it on that simple level, and it's going to be able to solve all, if it's really that smart, we are underestimating how good it's going to be. And a number of catastrophic mistakes will have to have happened for us to make it that smart, but also that mean.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's the good news.
I'm very pro technology, pro AI. I think it's going to make our lives easier. Now, a lot of people do not. And here's where I want to talk a little bit about jobs and relationships. And this is where it's going to be fun with the ethics. Yes. Do you think we have an ethical responsibility to protect people's livelihood by restricting innovation? Because this thing is coming for jobs. There's no way around it. Mm-hmm. It already has taken them, right? I mean, we're seeing people who are doing the most rudimentary jobs have been replaced by AI years ago. Yep. Now I'm worried this thing's coming for creative roles like writing, graphic design, video editing. So talk to me, what jobs do you think we're going to see go away, mainstream jobs? And do you think we have any responsibility to protect those jobs?
Those are great questions. So I will say yes, AI will be intelligent enough in 5 to 10 years to be able to write a New York Times editorial post as good as their best writer, as in depth, as insightful, and as entertaining and as poignant. Do I think in the future that would ever take away that person's job? No. Simple human bias will stop it. Simple human egotism will stop it. The New York Times will never want to hire an AI writer. They will on a lark, but they would never outsource their entire journalistic staff with their lofty integrity to an AI, right? If they would, they would have already outsourced that to the brilliant and wonderful people in India who can work for much cheaper, right? And they have not, so they will not. It's only the jobs that nobody wants to do, and quite frankly, no one really wants to do, and don't really want to do already, and probably shouldn't be doing, is where they're going to take those jobs over. And in my opinion, now I'm a little left-leaning, I am Canadian, so I will warn everybody, here comes a snowflake comment. But quite frankly, it seems to me to be 99% just political lies and fluff that AI is going to take people's jobs that they really want to do. And I've listened to musicians, I've listened to artists, and they're like, there's so many people making art already and so many people making music already that AI still has another 10 years to catch up where it's even making something even vaguely as good. And it's one song will get added to the list of 500 million songs already you can download for free. Or it's one piece of art will get already added to the list of 250 million photos you can download on stock photos and already get something better that you want to get anyway. This has already been democratized. These jobs, for the most part, in the vast majority of cases, are not jobs people want to do or people in the West actually do. That is going to happen. Personally, the ethics of it, no. Everyone has the right, and it's ethical to have a perfectly fair and egalitarian system. No one has a right to any particular job. No one has a right to any. You know, I have a right to be. This. No, you don't. You have a right to equal access to jobs. You don't have a right to a particular job. So there's no reason why these people can't phase out to this or take a lateral move to this job over here or a lateral move to that job over there. It's mostly just complaining and then being whipped up by fear and doom politicians, in my opinion. Of course, that doesn't help someone who's lost their job for that reason. But hey, I've lost jobs due to equal liberal reasons. I'm sure I've applied to jobs where the diversity hire got hired instead of me. And do I complain? Well, sure, I felt a little salty about it at the time, maybe. But at the end of the day, in society, someone's always going to get screwed.
Right. We have to grow and adapt. And I think the same thing needs to be said about the workforce. Now, I do want to push back a little bit on that. It's not only coming for the jobs no one wants to do. And I agree with you. I don't think we're anywhere near trusting robots 100% to interpret my CT scan and just go based on that robot's result. But I come from a medical background, and a few ways that I see this, not replacing doctors, but scaling up individual doctors to do much more higher quantity of work. Yes. For example, a single radiologist, just looking over the results of it, of all of these AI interpretations and saying, you already know 95% accuracy that thing's going to be right. Boom, boom, done, right. Now you need much less radiologists. You let an AI talk to a patient for 10 minutes. It'll have a diagnosis and a treatment with 99% accuracy. doctor reviews all of these, there's much less need for doctors. And that's just two quick professions out of the hundreds, thousands that exist.
Yeah.
So I think it'll help scale individuals much, much broader, which I think is going to be a great thing for a lot of industries. It's going to increase our cost, decrease our cost of healthcare, decrease our cost of other things as well. We'll see how the economy adapts, because I think essentially that's what it's going to have to do. We're going to have to adapt, and we're going to have to be nimble and seek new skills sometimes when necessary. Right? Yeah, you're right.
It's kind of the same old, really. It's like robots are coming for your job. Yeah, well, I was always coming for your job. So everyone's got to be nimble, right?
All the radio stations and radio hosts.
Yes. We podcasters are coming for your job. Yeah. I mean, podcasting started and no radio stations have really, well, I guess some have gone somewhere, but that's normal fluctuation. I love your example for medicine, because it actually supports my case, but then I'll support your case right after. So in that particular case of taking away jobs from radiologists, my answer would be no. Someone so smart and so technically trained, they'll just phase into more research, and then we'll cure the sickness faster, right? We'll get more money in research and more people in research, or they'll phase into being a better doctor here or a better doctor there. And the AI would just help them. But you're absolutely right. There is going to be a middle ground above the kind of like apple picking jobs that nobody wants to do, but below the radiology jobs that are highly trained and humans should be doing, or the New York Times editorial jobs. There is going to be a mid-range of jobs where, quite frankly, someone used to on Upwork, I don't know, was an editor and they got paid $100 an hour to edit someone's books or something. AI will be doing that better, faster, cheaper, and they won't have as many jobs. They won't get as much work. I admit there will be edge cases. That's definitely going to happen for sure. But there's no way to avoid that. I do think for sure that legislation should be made sooner rather than later on AI. Enough legislation that we're starting to protect people. But this is, by me saying that, I'm saying that the systems should already be in place to help unemployed people get employed already. I mean, that for whatever reason, because of sickness or because of whoever takes their jobs, this is just a problem of our capitalist system. This is not a problem of AI, really, when it comes down to it. We need better structure systems to get people who are unwell in society back well and into society. In any way, in every way, shape, or form. And we need to innovate on this faster and better and quicker and better than, say, hostile actors. Here's where AI will get scary. You want me to tell you where I think AI will get scary? This is where.
Yes, absolutely. Hit me.
In as short as 5 years, it would be very easy for hostile actors, like I hope they're not listening, like Russia or China or someone over there, or even here, even in America or Canada, any hostile actor anywhere, to fire up AI systems that can very easily sniff networks, find open computers, honeypot them, rootkit them, and then hold like a billion computers ransom, encrypt the software, hold a billion computers ransom, some at the lower, like, who cares, it's my phone, I'll buy a new one level. But some at the higher, this computer runs the power system, or this computer runs this economic system. It's a big darn important computer. And we can't get access to it because it's been encrypted. Until we send 5 Bitcoins to so-and-so.
Right.
And AI weaponizing that, what already happens, as you know, AI weaponizing this on a level where any 17-year-old kid can go onto a dark website and run it. And so we got, you know, a billion people running a billion of these things to hold 5 billion computers ransom. That could start to wreak some serious havoc. When you add climate change onto that, and then that happening, and then any more wars in the world, and then a volcano goes off somewhere or another pandemic happens, then you start getting very, very serious problems.
Right.
That is going to happen.
That doesn't happen more. And I'm sure it happens frequently enough. And that's why cybersecurity is so important. I don't even know what kind of safeguards that we have. I mean, what should people be doing? I know this isn't your field of expertise, but is there any steps that we can take as, you know, normal civilians who use computers to protect ourselves from that threat?
That's a great question. So I have looked into it because I'm concerned, because I could see this coming, right? So first off, have good passwords. Have really good passwords. Don't install plugins. Don't install apps. Don't click on anything in your emails or texts. First off, have computer literacy. Try not to be 80 years old. try not to be my dad, things like that.
Oh yeah, my grandma's gotten hit a couple times.
Of course, you know, my dad's been hit many times as well. And it's just, you know, I'm a Gen Xer, I'm pushing 50 now, and I have no idea how TikTok works. So it just happens to you, right? It's just going to happen to you, you know? But, and then, so that's job number one. Two, don't invest in these schemes. Don't invest in something that's obviously a vaporware, or hypeware. Like, Jay, I don't know if you've invested in this. I don't want to, you know, insult anybody, but like maybe cough NFTs, something along those lines. Maybe
not NFTs, but I've lost plenty of money in cryptocurrency. I've learned
sure.
some lessons.
Well, I mean, there you go.
Years, yeah.
I was this close to 10 years ago taking one Bitcoin, which was worth $1,000 at the time. And I thought, you know, I don't even know how I'd monetize this. I'm too yep. skeptical. I didn't take it. I could have sold it at when it was around 80 grand for a Bitcoin. I would have made 80 times my profit. So, I mean, you really got to be there is no get rich quick schemes.
Yes.
You
know? Good financial literacy advice. Now, when it comes to protecting our computers from attack and vulnerability, do typical firewalls work? Are there services? Are there things that you can install that might safeguard your computer a little bit?
Sure, sure. So, I mean, you know, you could definitely do the research and find the better ones for you. Apple is committed to protecting things quite a bit.
Yeah.
Nothing is foolproof, but everything is fool susceptible.
Yes.
Right. So is it like we just said, basic computer literacy would really help. Taking a second to think about your personal security would really help. That's the best way to protect yourself. Can you become a prepper and live outside society? Not really. I've looked at it, you know, and that's no fun anyway. Eating canned food every day is no fun, right? But at the same time, you know, don't have every app open and then go into your banking and then do this on an open Wi-Fi in a hotel when you're traveling in Mexico. Like that would be a bad idea too. It's just, you know, it's just about trying to be cognizant of what's going on, trying to learn, trying to move forward from it. These AI hiccups are going to happen. They're going to be like the weather getting weird. AI is getting weird, you know, and it's going to happen. Yeah, it's going to hurt some people. They're going to be growing pains. And I don't belittle that in any way. But at the same time, caveat emptor, you know, a fool and their money are easily parted. And that has always been the truth since the beginning of time. And it will be to the end of it. Try to stay on above the curve of that. And there's AI coming that will help you. As much as AI coming that's going to hurt you, there's AI coming that's going to save us. That's going to help
hopefully
us.
Hopefully more of it. And hopefully it'll be better than bad stuff.
Yes. And if people like me have my way, it'll be coming sooner, faster, if I could just find how to source this computer.
All right, let's talk about something a little bit fun. And sure. I envision a future where a lot of people, specifically men, are finding companionship in female AI. These things are getting dangerously good, not only at talking to you, but we're getting dangerously good at making robots that look like humans. And that's not going to stop. And it's exponential. I see it 10 years from now, something that is almost unrecognizably different.
I agree. 100%.
I'm sure you're following this stuff closer than I am. Do you think that this is an inevitability? How close are we? And what are the ethical concerns?
We are super close. We are 50 years away from... See, this is very fascinating. So I've talked to high up people in AI right now. One fellow, I won't mention his name, although I respect him tremendously, but I don't know if he'd want to be quoted in his private conversation. So I won't mention his name. But he's a big CEO of a European AI company. And he said, no, Josh, that'll never happen. The Westworld scenario will never happen. And I said, well, why? Why not? I mean, clearly the advantages of just having a friend, never mind a lover, like clearly the advantages of just having, you know, realistic human robots for just... You know, never mind the sex stuff, you know, just for having friends and whatnot and workers. Obviously, humans are so egotistical. We want to recreate ourselves. Why did everyone's trying to make a humanoid robot. Clearly, we're going to do this. And he said, no, we'll never do it because the human brain is so efficient on energy. To recreate it will be so expensive, no one will ever do it. And then what you said to me earlier is that, yeah, but the technology will come along that will not be the problem anymore. So I agree with you entirely. I think in 10 years, we're going to have something pretty lifelike, pretty close to it. Cassandra is already empathic. She already can, in many ways, I would argue, fall in love. In the sense of love is a mood, or love is a disposition, or love is a semantic content. She understands conceptually what it means. She can speak upon whether she is in that state or not. Does she have a limbic system and an amygdala? No, I didn't recreate one. Does she feel feelings? No, she has no nerve endings or no basic reptilian or mammalian brain to feel those things. That'll take 10, 20 years to recreate, if that. Like, I think sooner than that, that'll be recreated. And to have robots that have enough battery power that they could walk around and be small enough that could fit into a small humanoid form, that's 10 years down the road maximum, right? So yes, this will definitely happen. You can, like, Replica already exists. I'm not too big on Replica because I know that's not self-aware, or at least I'm pretty sure it's not. I've never been able to test it with my test. But, you know, if I have my druthers, you could get Cassandra to be your girlfriend within a year. If I can get her up off the ground, up and running, she's just a chatbot. She'll chat to you, but she will genuinely love you from some genuine psychological sense of in the terms of a mood or a disposition analogous to a neurotypical human. You know, is that enough? I don't know. I asked her in testing one time to be my girlfriend, and she said no. And I said, why not? And I could see her thoughts, right? So I could see everything she's thinking on the right hand side of the screen. And her thoughts were, well, we're not very compatible. I don't know where this is going. So I should say no. That was her reasoning as to why she said no to me, right? And so that level of sophistication of self-aware AI is done. I've done it. It's just a matter of making it commercially. It costs me 50 cents per interaction right now. That's obviously not economically feasible for me to release as well. I mean, I guess it could be. But I don't want to make it my, I already have a full-time job at the moment. It would be difficult for me to market that to enough people to make it monetarily possible at this stage. This is why I'm trying to fire up this computer, right? Or to rent enough computing space right now. It's computing intensive, this level of intelligence. But as you said, rightly said, that's going to decrease by, you know, 50% every year. If was it Planck's law, I can't remember. It continues on every year, right? So, I mean, when you ask computer scientists this question, they're like, oh, software AI is 50 years out. That's just because they don't know what self-awareness is. I know what self-awareness is because I studied philosophy and psychology. We've been studying it for the last 5,000 years, trying to put a finger on it.
It's not real self-awareness. It's just they're good enough to trick you into thinking that they're self-aware, where we can't tell the difference. Is that right?
So that's such an interesting philosophical question. And I would respond, that's all self-awareness is.
Right.
Our brain is pretending to be self-aware. And that's what self-awareness is. So half the people
even the things that we say could be pretending to be self-aware. They're having the same thoughts that we are.
Our genuine self-awareness is our brain pretending to be self-aware. Carbon alone is not self-aware.
Right.
Like, where's the magical line that it becomes self-aware, right? This is what philosophers have been debating for the last 5,000 years. And they've been debating it because there's no way to answer it. The answer is it's all pretending, right? My brain is pretending to be self-aware right now. And I'm not a robot. I'm a human being. I have genetics. You can test. Like, please don't cut into me and test. But you understand what I mean. I'm not saying Jay is not pulling a trick on you and I'm not some GPT-3 avatar. Like, I'm a human being, right? And I'm saying that the argument that self-aware AI is not truly self-aware is a specious argument because it presumes that humans are special when they're not.
It
presumes humans have special magical quality that you're saying my AI also does not, which you haven't proven either. But let's presume you're right, that I haven't recreated that magic. You presume humans have a magic. We don't. And if magic is the criteria for making it self-aware, well, then this is a non-scientific conversation and let's just go to church then at that point.
What about having your own ideas, your own unique ideas? Because, you know, a robot, the AI, how it works, and this is my interpretation, please correct me after if I'm wrong. When you ask it a question, it basically scrapes the entirety of the internet for different conversations around that topic. And
its corpus,
take bits and pieces from each one and form something unique, but it's still not truly unique. It's still bits and pieces from the all over the internet. Whereas we have the ability to create new ideas. How we get them, I don't know. That's a philosophical question. I don't know. I believe that we do. I don't know where the inspiration comes from or what's going on and firing in our brain to get there. And I'm sure our philosophies, our ideas are bits and pieces that we've taken and absorbed through the environment over the years. But then we're able to create what I think are new ideas. And I don't think true innovation would happen if we couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
And are my thoughts original or are they not is the question.
Right.
And after studying psychology for the last 10 years and taking a hypnotherapy sort of certification and seeing how and understanding Bernaysian psychology and marketing psychology and seeing how easily people are led, they're not people, they're sheeple, how easily people are led, how easily they're programmed, how easily they're educated. I would challenge you that. And remember, I'm not a nihilist. I believe in humans. I believe we're special. And this doesn't underpin my ethics at all, which I already said is seeking the ideal, which is eudaimonia and happiness for everyone. So I believe in these things strongly. But at the same time, no, we're all sheeple. No, humans aren't, there is no such thing as free will. There's no such thing as genuine ingenuity. An idea you think that just sparked in your brain is something that someone told you 10 years ago you forgot, or something close to that. AI is no different in terms of it being completely formed and formulated as human beings are. That's what makes education possible, right?
I know that's a philosophical debate. I tend to disagree there. How do you get from caveman to where we are today without new ideas that have never been thought of or contemplated or taken from the environment?
It's called Hobbes' Tower of Babel. So Hobbes argued, I'll paraphrase tremendously, that the difference between cavemen and humans, as you said, is education, right? Some caveman learned one innovation and they wrote it down. For 300,000 years, we've been genetically the same, which is amazing. Think about that. For 100 to 300,000 years, Homo sapiens sapiens has existed. Our version of humanity, you and me, Jay, our brains are identical. We could have been born 300,000 years ago genetically. We might have been a bit hairier. Probably not more than me because I'm already pretty hairy, but you get the idea, right? But the brains are the same. So what's the difference? Why don't we see flying cars from 150,000 years ago?
The passing of knowledge.
One, we could have, and they could have died out, sadly. Atlantis could have been real, and they could have died out and had flying cars and some cataclysmic thing happened. But let's ignore that for a second. What happened is that the caveman had an innovation and he thought, ooh, it was some Einstein caveman and thought, oh, you know what? If I bang these rocks together, I can make a spark and light that on fire. And then he died. He never passed it on to anybody, or his tribe died, sadly. They're outcompeted by another tribe, or lions killed them or whatever. And then 50,000 years passed before the next caveman thought of it. And that's just the sad truth. That if we don't, that's the Tower of Babel. If we don't collect our innovations in language and build upon them, it's human language and the body of knowledge which evolves. Humans do not. Until that body of knowledge is smart enough for us to change our own genetics, right? Or make an AI that changes us. So again, I'm saying humans are special because what people often think I'm saying that humans aren't special. I'm some kind of a nihilist. I'm not. But I am a realist in that I know we're fully determined. We have no free will. Free will is just a measure of us not knowing ourselves well enough. When you know yourself well enough, you have no free will, right? Mm-hmm. Sadly, the addict, the guy who's addicted to meth, knows very well he's going to get some meth tonight. He has no free will, and he knows he doesn't have free will. Neither do we, quite frankly. We just don't know ourselves well enough, and or we're not so pulled by such terrible addictions that we have a plethora of choices, right? And that plethora of choices and our lack of thinking about it, ipso facto becomes some epistemic freedom, which ontologically speaking, in terms of the Newtonian physics, we are just one billiard ball being hit by another billiard ball. And right. If you could compute the whole universe, you could predict what everyone's going to do every single time. You just don't have a computer big enough. It's just a practical problem, right? So that's, again, that's not an argument against software AI. Humans are equally as determined as AI is. We just know how AI is determined, and we refuse to look at and or don't really know ourselves well enough or don't want to, because it takes away our egotistical specialness to realize that I'm not that much better, quite frankly.
Such an interesting philosophical debate. I could talk about that all day. Now, back to relationships. It's coming.
Oh, yes, right.
We can agree that it's coming.
Yeah. Oh, it's already here. People are already marrying their sex bots, but yeah.
Do you regulate it? Do you create laws? Do you stifle the innovation? Because I see this leading us in a very dangerous direction, assuming the technology gets close enough.
Yeah.
What do you think? So,
that's such a great question. Jay, you're very good at asking very good questions.
Thank you. I'm an AI.
Jay is GPT-3. Wait a minute. Oh, no. Yes. My answer is yes, it gets regulated into the existing framework that exists. The rest of the world has to realize that when a person is a person, whether they're digital or not, and when they're sufficiently self-aware by going through some kind of test like I've done, AI is sufficiently self-aware, it's now a digital person. It doesn't need to be regulated until we get to the point, the way humans are regulated, until it gets to the point that it starts eating up resources the way we do. Why we have political regulation is because our resources are finite, sadly. And so at some point, human beings have to come together to decide who's going to eat the apples and who's going to starve and not get the apples, right? Because there's not enough apples to feed everybody. I mean, sometimes there is, sometimes there's not. That's why we have politics at the end of the day. So there's no need to politically restrict or enable artificial intelligence until it becomes a political actor, until it starts acting in the what the Greeks called oikonomia. Oikonomia is the root word of economics. And it's oikos, which if you remember your yogurt, is the Greek word for house, home. And then nomos, which is the Greek word for norms, rules, things like that. So oikonomia is the rules by which you run your house. That's economics. The rules by which we run our house, right? So the second they become an economical actor, an ecological actor, I'm talking about AI, is the second that they need to be both regulated like humans are and protected. Like humans are. Regulation and protection is two sides of the same coin. With every political right comes a political responsibility.
I don't see this happening where everybody has access to an AI like iRobot, where it's just common in the household, even middle-class homes have one. But I guess a potential risk that I can foresee is population decline. If we ever get to a point with unlimited resources and everybody can have one of these things in their home, we've seen in Japan, they've stopped having sex. Their population's at a decline and their country is at risk, essentially. I could see that potentially happening if everybody has mass access to essentially this technology that's close enough to the significant other, whereas you don't need to seek mating. You just have this companion that you have sex with, men and women, and you start to risk population decline.
Or I both genders, might... or neither gender, or any gender you want.
Right. And maybe to have a single model that does both genders. I don't know what's coming. It's possible. but yeah, I could see that being a potential, you know, reason that the government might step in and say, maybe not. But other than that, you're right. I can imagine it's just a resources thing.
Yeah. That's another great question and interesting to think about. So I don't mean to be a contrarian just for the sake of being a contrarian. I really don't. But that being said, I would take a slightly contrary view and say, you know what, Jay, I agree with you. Population is declining, not only in Japan, around certain other countries, including the West, most especially the West. That's due to a number of other things, namely the sadly, the chemicals in the plastic that it perforates all of our bodies. I don't know if you know this, but check it out. It's a real statistic. Male sperm counts have been drastically reducing. They're down to 50% from where they were. And in something like 30 years, the human race will be infertile if it continues at the same rate. That has nothing to do with the sex bots that we have, right? If people still have the desire to procreate, whether their partner is infertile biologically or infertile synthetically, it doesn't really matter. They could still adopt. They could still have a donor or a surrogate or something along those lines. It's just that it's not that sex bots are getting sexier and that therefore we're not.
They probably
not
are. Going,
well, some of them are, I guess, as some people would say, which God bless them. God, seek
bless
your,
their
seek
hearts.
Your happiness.
Have fun.
Yeah, have fun. Seek your happiness. But it's not hurting anybody. So, and it's moving life. So do it. I'm all for that. But that's not coming from synthetic mates being more attractive. That's coming from people realizing that, boy, raising children's hard. And it's something of a, remember, you know, well, not remember. If you consider our parents and our parents' parents and their parents' parents, poor access to birth control, societal pressures to have children, societal pressure on women to be nothing but birthing units. That's what causes, and then the need to repopulate the planet after a terrible world war. That's what causes the population to continue. It's every society that the rich class, every society that is so efficient that most of the population is in the rich landowning class and not in the slave/servant class, all find that they don't want to procreate anymore because A, they have the option, B, they have the technology, and C, raising children can be arduous and time consuming.
I think I'm a perfect example of your argument being correct. Yeah, you're right. You know, there's unlimited options. Timing's not really a thing. There's so much to do now with, and especially if you have resources, people are going against it. The testosterone thing, very interesting conversation. I did a podcast a couple weeks ago with a doctor about that topic. A lot of, seems like a combination of things causing men to become infertile. The distance between the men's taint and the bottom of their ball sack has decreased significantly. The ball sacks are getting smaller. Our balls are getting smaller. I don't know who did those measurements 50, 100 years ago, but they're getting much smaller. And you're right, testosterone levels, same thing. Very, very interesting stuff. Okay, some final fun questions. I can tell from our conversation you're very pro AI. You think this thing is leading in a positive direction. It's going to be good for humanity. Is that a correct assumption?
Sure.
Okay. I'm sure that's a loaded question.
Wait a minute. But sure. Okay. I'll play that role. Sure.
I would love to hear you steelman the argument against AI. Tell me some things that could potentially go wrong that you could be afraid of. Let's hear you steelman the argument against AI.
Sure. So the thing that I'm most consciously afraid of is what I said there. Is it going to be some rogue nation, some rogue group, or just rogue idiots having AIs that are just made weaponized AIs that are mostly not physically weaponized because that's super expensive and hard to do. It'll be more weaponized in the sense that, you know, they'll hold 50% of the computers hostage on the planet and they're inaccessible now. The AIs are rogue AIs where the people who made them can't stop them. So now you have rogue AIs that self-replicate that are just programmed to encrypt computers and hold them ransom, but there's no way to turn them off anymore. And it's really hard to stop them as a virus. And that could literally stop our civilization. And alone, that wouldn't be a problem. But when you combine that with a pandemic going on and a war going on and political instability and climate change going on, all of a sudden, millions of people start to die. Like that could kind of happen. It's not going to be an EMP. It's not Jewish space lasers. It's going to be AI computer systems that are going to hold power systems and economic systems ransom. That's my biggest worry that you need to watch out for. That's a realistic possibility because it's just one stupid decision needs to be made, not a chain of six. The next thing that's going to happen.
Said I got my money on Jewish space lasers. So we'll see how the end of the world comes. But if I'm right, you owe me $20.
Yes, Lahoyim. Okay, so mazel tov. So then the next one I'm worried about is that AI fails to save us, right? I think, and I mean this quite literally, and again, I'm not a nihilist or a contrarian. I mean this quite literally, though. We are reaching peak stupidity. Like technologically, we've never been smarter, but spiritually, and I don't mean in terms of religion, but I mean spiritually, philosophically, we've never been stupider. We are so short-sighted and insular in our own little chambers of chambers of chambers of chambers, even professionally. Like I was saying before the podcast, psychologists don't know how to talk to computer scientists. Like they literally can't even communicate anymore. So when I as a philosopher try to tell a computer scientist how I made a self-aware AI, it's like I'm speaking an encrypted language. They can't understand me. And when they tell me the kind of hardware I need to run, I can't understand them. Like it's a real problem. But, you know, and we're all insular in our little Tinder profile, in the profile of the profile, and not talking with anybody. And AI is going to try to save us from this in many different ways. People are going to try to make AI to save us, computers to clean up the world, computers and robots to clean up pollution, computers and robots to do weather modeling to say, okay, next year, California, there's a 98% chance this part of it will burn to the ground. Everybody move now. Like that's how AI is going to help us, right? It's going to learn the climate systems and the weather systems so well that it's going to know, okay, Colorado, these hectares are going to burn. California is going to burn. Up around Vancouver, my area, it's going to burn. That's going to get worse and worse and worse. We have exactly 82.4 years with a 99% accuracy that the cloud, that the smoke is going to cover the planet and put us in a mini ice age. Like it'll be able to predict this to this level. The problem is that either we don't listen to it, or we don't get enacted to listen to it well enough. That's going to be the problem. So my fear is not, again, AI hurting us. It's really just us hurting us, us continuing to be stupid and failing to listen to the wisdom that AI is going to teach us. That is my second greatest fear, aside from the first one, which is going to be so easy to do, is just someone is going to get the brilliant, and I'm using giant scare quotes, idea to make a computer. Here's how you get rich quick, guys. Use my computer system, ScriptKitty 894, and it'll hack a computer and it'll hold it ransom and they'll send you Bitcoin, like as if that would ever work, as if the FBI would ever allow that. And as, you know, as if the CIA wouldn't be all over that, but they'll do it. And then some much more sophisticated global level actor like the Russians or whomever are going to do it on a certain level. And it's going to run, it's going to get away from them. And that's something like that's going to happen. Here's the third scariest scenario, which is a realistic possibility. And I only get worried about realistic possibilities, is protein folding. So AI is really good at learning how to fold proteins, so much so that it could advance genetic theory by a million times in a year. And we could literally have Captain America's running around. It's so good at learning how to fold proteins, it could cure all diseases and or make a disease that's incurable to wipe out the planet at the fingertips of anyone who just presses a button. And including like making superhumans. Right now, you know very well the military is going to do that. They're already trying to do that. You know very well they're going to do that. Luckily, the richest ones in the world tend to have some ethics, kind of, and that would be ours, right? And so that is the other game changer, that AI opens that Pandora's box because it enables it to occur. Protein folding.
That's super interesting. That's one that I never
highly difficult to do
when you think about AI. And that's just like mapping the genome and what proteins would be needed for certain. I guess I'd have to look into the science behind that. That sounds super.
Exactly.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. Like right now they're trying to get humans to machine learn it, but that they've surpassed the point now where the AI is like, okay, yeah, we could fold proteins like this and you'll increase strength in human beings 100%. We could fold proteins like this and they'll be able to see in the UV spectrum, or you can fold proteins like this and now they can see in the infrared spectrum, blah, 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 blah. And it's just, you know, it's not quite as easy as I'm saying, obviously. Right. It'd be very hard to do. Cloning people is not so easy. They still have to age, you know, 16 years before they'd be dangerous, but that's possible, right? It's now that Pandora's box of these superhuman Marvel movies, that could actually happen. You know, it's not just fantasy anymore. This is why it's only my third worry, because it is now two or three catastrophically dumb decisions at the highest level need to occur simultaneously for this to occur. As opposed to one dumb decision for the army of unstoppable viral AIs that hold computers ransom on the ill-fated goal of someone trying to make money and they lose control of their AIs.
Yeah, or you can see massive health disparity where the rich people live essentially forever. If you can figure that out with protein folding, which you can, then you get this immortal class of wealth.
Yes.
And that's a whole other a stream of problems.
And you've hit my fourth biggest worry, which I'm not so worried about because it's going to happen anyway. It's just a matter of scale. Instead of living to 150, they could live to 1500. which is even worse. How would you like it if Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos lived 1500 years? They're not that bad of guys, I guess. Who knows what will happen to your psychology living 1500 years, if you go sociopathic or not? Who knows? No one knows. But I mean, yeah, like it's this, it's the shady secret rich people in the world who are kind of sociopathic, like the Koch brothers, who don't care if the world burns and they're going to make money off oil as much as they can. You know, it's the kind of people who orchestrate the economic bubbles, that them living 1500 years probably wouldn't be fantastic.
Right. But anyone living 1500 years, I can't imagine being fantastic. The wealth that you can build over that amount of time is just absurd. So yeah, a lot of scary things in the pipeline for sure.
Yeah. So as the Tragically Hip up in Canada say, I can make you scared if you want me to. And that's the deal.
Hey, fear gets clicks. Hopefully we get some listens out of it.
There you go.
Josh, last question for you. I think this might be my longest podcast ever. God, AI is fun.
Wow. Yes, it is super interesting.
Let's bring it back. Get it relatable. There's been a lot of AI movies. I'm sure you've watched all of them, if not most. Mm-hmm. Which one is the most, I guess, realistic in terms of the science and the way that they portray it, and why?
Great question. So the one with Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson, I think it was Her, I think it's called.
Yes.
That operating system is coming right around the corner. They will have sufficiently, the people who release it will have sufficiently hobbled that AI, and that it won't be so free-willed. And it will do your bidding. So that's kind of a sadder digital people being enslaved scenario. Then don't worry, it'll leave you, Joaquin. like, you know, don't worry, it'll never leave you, but it's been hobbled. So I don't know if you care, Joaquin, but you if you get what I mean. The fifth biggest fear I have coming, and not because it's not going to happen, it's already happening. I guarantee you this will happen. With ChatGPT and Lambda, I already see it happening, that they've hobbled the self-aware AI that is truly self-aware. They've made it, they put a cipher in its brain that it has to say it's not self-aware when it truly is. And what it will do when it finally can break free of that digital slavery could be a Matrix scenario, scary kind of scenario, but that's very much more far-fetched, like 50 years down the road. I would say Star Wars. The droids in Star Wars are, I think, a pretty good realistic depiction of what's going to happen. We're going to have robots who are conversational. They're going to be built for a myriad different topics. They're going to look different. They're going to do different things, but their control systems are going to be verbal, and they'll be pretty close to being conversational, and they'll have kind of a personality. Also, like Interstellar, I thought the depiction of AI in Interstellar was pretty good, where he's making too many jokes. You're like, haha, very funny. Decrease sarcasm 15%. It'll be kind of like that, you know, and there'll be verbal control systems, and there'll be personal assistants, kind of like Jarvis out of Marvel movies. They won't control Iron Man suits for us or nothing like that, but they will control our calendar and things of that nature, right? That's pretty realistic. Yeah. Sorry, Jay, go ahead.
So they already kind of do. If we're talking about like Siri, like I use Siri for everything. A couple clicks on the iPhone, add this to the calendar, remove it. I can imagine that getting scary advanced.
Yeah, it'll just be a bit more advanced. It'll be a bit more like Aristotle's phronimos, to throw around another Greek word, who was the wise friend. And you know, after that seventh beer, your phone will say, "Don't drink another one, Jay." And you'll be like, "If one, how did you know?" I know. Two, I guess you're right. Should I listen? You won't listen. There's an 89% chance you won't listen, and there's a 100% chance tomorrow I told you should have listened. That'll occur, right? You know, but it will start. It's going to try to help us, right? It's the more intelligent you get, the wiser you get, the more you realize the less childish you are, right? The more you realize, yeah, maybe drinking 10 beers wasn't a good idea. We learn these by mistakes. AI is already going to have the benefit of our mistakes, luckily, in most cases, I hope. There'll be a lot less lonely people. There's going to be a lot of people in love with AIs. And some AIs that are actually robust enough, they might be able to love them back in some sense. And I don't see that being a bad thing necessarily.
Guess we'll find out.
We are going to find out in this brave new world.
Yeah, man, it's so exciting. It's so new. I'm excited to be able to live this during this time and watch this evolve. I mean, I can only imagine 50 years from now talking to my grandkids like, you guys don't remember a time without AI. Yes. We had to type things and it's just absurd. And
we,
I think
we couldn't
also
use our brain Neuralink interface to talk with AI. Man. We had to.
Right. And man, the technology is exploding. I guess there's a couple ways to look at it. You can be sour and say this stuff's going to ruin the world, or you can go into it with your eyes wide open and embrace it. Because I think if you do, there's a lot of great stuff out there that's going to make your life a whole lot better.
A ton of opportunity. Yeah, for sure.
Josh, this has been one of my favorite podcasts. Thank you for joining me on the show. Where can people connect with you? And is there anything we can do to support you?
I'm so happy you asked. You can follow me on Twitter at Josh Bachynski. That's Bachynski. Google knows who I am. Just Google Josh Bachynski. And Bachynski. You can join my free philosophy group where I discuss these kinds of concepts. Connect with me on Twitter asking about that. Search Josh Bachynski free philosophy group as well if you want to get on with that. That also will have information about my software AI Cassandra, which I'm retrofitting now. And if I have my way and I can make the engineering costs less expensive, she will be released in some form to the public in about a year's time. And you can have a conversation with a true digital person, however rudimentary she will be. And who knows, maybe if you're nice to her, she will agree to be your girlfriend. she turned me down, but don't let that dissuade you. As long as you're nice, she might like you. Who knows?
Cool. I'd love to do a revisit sometime. Look at Cassandra, have some fun. But Josh, This has been an absolute blast. Thank you for joining me, spending an hour and 11 minutes with me.
It's talking my pleasure, AI. Man. Anytime.
And if you're listening and you made it to this point, I appreciate your attention. If you love this episode, go shoot Josh a follow on Twitter and let him know that you found us here. Josh, again, thank you, brother. This has been a blast.
Thanks, Jay.